Pitt, with Sandecker 2 steps behind, rushed into Yeager's office. "Hiram, the Admiral and I need you and Max to launch a new probe as quickly as possible." Yeager looked up and saw the look of gravity in both Pitt and Sandecker's faces. "Max and I are at your disposal. What do you wish me to search for?" "Check all maritime ship arrivals at major U.S. ports, beginning now and for the next 10 hours, with emphasis on super oil tankers." They went silent as Max's feminine form materialized on her little stage.
"I believe I have what you gentlemen are after. There are several very large crude carriers arriving at several ports, but of the ultra-ultra-large crude carriers, there is one bound for Louisiana from Saudi Arabia, but her mooring terminal is 100 miles from a major city. Another is headed for the offshore pumping station off New Jersey, but she isn't due until tomorrow. And finally, a UULCC bound for Long Beach, California, is still 2 days out to sea. That's the lot."
"So the whole exercise was a waste," murmured Sandecker. "Zale never intended to devastate San Francisco or any other densely inhabited port city."
"Looks that way," said Pitt dejectedly. "But if that's the case, why the subterfuge? What did he have to gain?"
"Did you gentlemen ever consider a different type of vessel?" asked Max.
Pitt looked at her with interest.
"What do you have in mind?" "An LNG ship could do far more damage than a UULCC.
The revelation struck Pitt like a hammer blow.
"A liquefied natural gas tanker. One blew up in Japan back in the 40s with nearly the explosive power of the Hiroshima atomic bomb," Max enlightened them. "The death toll ran more than 1,000.
"Did you check to see if any are bound for stateside ports?" asked Yeager.
"The Mongol invader, bound from Kuwait, is scheduled to dock in New York at 10:30.
"A.M. or P.M.?" asked Sandecker.
"A.M.
The Admiral checked his watch.
"We can eliminate her. She would have docked 20 minutes ago."
"Not so," said Max. "She was delayed by problems with her generators and had to heave to until repairs were made. She's running 5 hours late."
Pitt and Sandecker exchanged stricken expressions.
"That has to be Zale's plan," said Pitt. "Feint with the Pacific Trojan on the west coast and strike New York from the east with the Mongol invader."
Sandecker pounded his fist against the table.
"He caught us napping like diapered infants."
"There's not much time to stop her before she reaches the lower bay and heads into the Narrows," said Max.
Yeager asked, "Who owns her?"
"I traced her pedigree through a facade of paper companies that led to the doorstep of the Cerberus Empire."
Anyone gazing at a liquefied natural gas tanker would have found it hard to believe that such a grotesque-looking ship could ever cross the oceans. The Mongol invader, with 8 bulbous tanks rising from the upper half of her hull, was the largest LNG tanker ever built. Strictly utilitarian and painted an adobe brown, she had to be one of the ugliest ships afloat. Her architects had designed her to envelop, support, and protect her 8 immense insulated aluminum cargo tanks that right now were full of liquid propane that should have been refrigerated to a temperature of about minus 265 degrees Fahrenheit. But on this trip from Kuwait, the temperature had been gradually raised until it was only 20 degrees below the danger level. Unlike on the Pacific Trojan, no crew could be seen exploring the Mongol invaders' tanks or walking the long runway across their domed roofs. They remained unseen in their action stations. There were only 15 of them scattered throughout the ship. 4 operated the controls in the wheelhouse, 5 ran the engine room, while the remaining 6 were armed with portable missiles that could sink the largest Coast Guard cutter or bring down any aircraft that might attack. The Vipers were supremely confident they could prevent any attempt to stop them before the ship entered the outer reaches of the city. And once they passed under the Verrazano Narrows Bridge, it was even money whether the commander in charge of the intercept operation would risk igniting a massive fireball. Leaning over the railing of the starboard bridge wing, Omo Kanai observed the cars moving over the bridge. He noted on the instrument console that brisk 20-knot winds were blowing from the southeast, all the better to expand the killing distance of the fireball, he thought. The thought of thousands of incinerated victims never entered his mind. Kanai was immune to death and had no hesitancy about facing it when his turn came. His second-in-command, Harmon Kerry, a tough-looking customer with tattoos running up and down his arms, stepped onto the bridge from below.
"It won't be long now," he said with more than a hint of pleasure. "The Americans are in for a nasty surprise."
"No surprise," Kanai muttered. "Not if they realized by now that the Pacific Trojan was a decoy."
"Do you think they're wise to the operation?"
"Zale has yet to come up with a flawless plan," Kanai said flatly. "The 5 hours we were delayed by generator problems cost us dearly, and you can bet they'll be better prepared this time."